Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the world. It's Teeing It Up with C and D. I'm the C, and I'm with the V. Vladdy, what's going on, man? Another week, more football to talk about, some baseball, some tragic endings for some teams, some 2-0 series leads for others.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Not really much. It was kind of a great weekend of football, baseball as well, with kind of the Tigers game five, but nothing really noteworthy. So if you have something, I turn it over to you. If not, let's get right into the sports.
Not really. I'll just comment on the weather. I've kind of enjoyed this like colder fall air, and it seems like we're going to get some 60s and maybe into the 70s over the next couple days. Which, like, this time of year is perfect because it's a different 70 than in August or even early September. And I just kind of love this type of weather. So I'm just going to mention the weather. Shout out weather.
There you go. That's the kind of small talk right before bosses get on the meeting and you actually start what you're supposed to talk about. But let's
and
let's...
that we will. Luckily, we'll start in college as we always do. Luckily, we don't have to start with Michigan State this week. There was a bye. But this week was every bit as advertised as far. Oh, wait. We're not starting with college football.
No, we got to talk about the
My mistake.
Saturday early afternoon game.
Yeah. So since we last talked, the Tigers, I believe, had a 2-1 lead. And now we sit with the Tigers eliminated. They blow that 2-1 lead. Saturday, I don't really even have much to add in that. Just it's so sad. You had Skuball going. You had probably your best chance with this team. He was throwing a good game. And then he gives up, gets into some trouble, and gives up the grand slam. The game, you know, more or less was over after that. I know there was runs scored after that. But I'm going to kind of focus on game four where they choked and where I thought AJ Hinch could actually kind of let this team down. You got the start you wanted out of Reese Olson. I mentioned that this was a two-man rotation. They were able to get a third and a start out of Reese Olson in game four. He went four innings of one-run baseball. And that's exactly what you needed him to do, especially in this day and age. That's considered enough. And then they, Stephen Voit, the Indians, the Guardians manager, pulled some strings. He gets the Fry guy who's been in and out of the lineup, hits a pinch hit home run. Guardians go up by two. And then the Tigers in the top of the ninth go with Jackson Job, the rookie, who in his only playoff series, I don't want to say blew the game because they ended up coming back and winning, but did not look good, couldn't get out of a full inning. He gets the first two outs. He gets into some trouble. He gives up a single. And then the one guy in that lineup who had tore you up all weekend. Yeah, Jose Ramirez hit a big home run. Yeah, the four hitter, I'm blanking on his name, Taylor, I believe, who hit the grand slam against Skuball, had the big hit. Yeah, Fry came off the bench and had the good hit. But the guy that continuously tore you up was Kwan. He comes up to bat, first guy on first two outs. You know you're going Will Vest in the ninth. If there's any chance, you're down two. He's already hot. And you leave him in there to face a much more experienced hitter that just Jackson Job wasn't ready for. He gets the hit, goes first and third, and now you have to bring in Vest with a spot where there's no breathing room. And Vest gives up the single, and the Tigers go down two. And I always say, and it really only matters, that the Tigers get another run in the ninth off of Class A, who wasn't so Class A in this series, but he's damn near unhittable. And that would have tied the game. I didn't understand after what had happened in the first series and his lack of experience and how good Will Vest was going back to him. I know it was kind of a weird game. You obviously, who started Reese Olson, you go back and you bring in Holton, then you get Bo Brisky, who was kind of their number two guy out of the pen, to Will Vest. And he kind of gives up the big home run there, kind of fails in that spot. But he had been so good prior to that, that move made sense. You had to go to him. So it was a wacky kind of bullpen night there. But I just didn't understand not letting your best reliever have the best chance of getting guys out, and not having your best guy face the guy that had torn you up all series. So I was really critical of that move. Aside from that, this team overperformed. This was a team, like we've talked about for weeks, only had a 0.2% chance in early August. They ride basically a two or three, two and a half, I'll call it, man rotation the entire season. And with a young core, the bats got hot. Guys were outperforming. You had Torkelson turn his season around. Parker Meadows turn his season around. Guys really turn their season around. It's going to be a weird off season. And I know there's talks around whether to Skubal is going to have to get resigned. He's got one more year on his deal right now. The thought is that you're going to have to bring in at least two more pitchers to this rotation, whether they're Kenta Maeda-esque or a little greater will depend on what Scott Harris and Chris Illich are willing to spend and what the plan is moving forward. I think this is the spot where you see them go out and get one real bat, possibly at the second base position, I'd see it, and you move Colt Keith to first and Spencer Torkelson bye-bye, and one big arm. So it's almost like the spot, I believe it was 3 years ago now, with Baez and Eduardo Rodriguez, where they went out and got one big bat and one big arm and said, listen, like, we're investing in this team. We believe the young core is there, but it deserves kind of a veteran presence and something. They're rewarded with something extra in that lineup. And I think that's what this team needs to do this offseason. I don't really think they need to, nor do I at all expect the way with the Tigers have spent their money over the last decade now, basically, them to go and make huge, huge splashes in terms of two or three bats, and, two arms and one of the big haters out of the bullpen that cost you 15 plus million. But I do expect, and I think Scott Harris recognizes this is the time to start adding pieces, that you don't have to complete the puzzle right now, but adding pieces to this young core, and they'll be, while they might not again be a playoff team, they'll be right there in this AL Central next year if they're able to do that.
Yeah, I'll start with the actual baseball and then move my way to the future, kind of the way you did. Those last two games were very, very depressing, and it was just to come down to reality. You kind of remember why this team at one point only had a 0.2% chance. You remember why this team was 10, 12, or whatever the number games back of the wild card at one point. You remember kind of why this city has been largely apathetic to this team for the last decade, because they came back to reality. So some really fun stats as I'm sitting here box score perusing. In the last two games, the Tigers were 2 for 23 with runners in scoring position. That's unacceptable. Just flat out unacceptable. You look at their kind of playoff, let's say, repertoire. Now, granted, 7 games is not really much, but in those 7 games, you only scored more than 4 runs once, and you only scored more than 3 runs one other time when you put up 4. So you just kind of remember why you were playing on such thin ice, such fine margins, and why one Tarik Skubal grand slam pretty much buried you. You don't have consistent
Room for
offense. You don't have feared hitters. You don't have anybody who can routinely put runs on the board. Now, I'll give them credit. To go 2 for 23, you gotta have 23 chances with guys in scoring position. So they did have the opportunities. They put guys on base, they just couldn't get them home. And I just remember complaining with friends throughout the game 4 and 5. It's like, and another one, another one, another one. I'm counting them off like Aiden Childs turnovers. It's like, what? It was very disappointing. You mentioned the fact that in game 5, you sit there, you're favored because you do have the best pitcher in baseball who was on at that point, like a 20 inning scoreless streak, and gets into trouble. And the guy who likes to swing at first pitches, his name eludes me. You think, is it Taylor? I don't think it's Taylor.
I think I did the same thing and said, I think it's Taylor in my monologue as
Well,
well. So let's go with that.
whatever his name is, he likes to swing at the first pitch. He swings at the first pitch and sends it out of the park. That's unfortunate. That's life. You played a better team. You lost to a better team. It is what it is. Moving into the future, You're right. This is absolutely not a roster that you can turn around and say, "Oh, well, the young guys did so well, they made the playoffs. We can just sit here and not add anything." Because if you try this again, you're not going to make the playoffs. You're not beating the odds twice. You're going to grossly or grotesquely regress, and it's going to get ugly. So you're right. You do have to spend, and maybe that off season where you add Baez and Erod, maybe that's a perfect comp. Maybe you go out there and you say, "We're going to get you a positional player. We're going to get you another starter. Next year, Jackson Jobe is going to have a little bit more experience. He'll become a starter as the season goes on. I'm sure they'll keep him in the minors to start the year so they can get that extra arbitration year because that's how baseball works. It's ridiculous, but that's not a point for right now. You'll get Jackson Jobe as another starter as the season goes on and into the playoffs, and you'll kind of give it another run." I don't know. That Chris Ilitch, my feelings have always been known. He treats this team like an investment, not a team. And I am worried that he's going to sit there and do nothing. And the only thing that gives me a little bit of hope is because this team went on the run, because this team got the city engaged and got the people engaged, he might not have a choice. There might be so much public pressure of, "Hey, man, like, you have to add to this, or else we are going to go back to irrelevancy. Add to this." Maybe he will have to give in, but we get there when we get there. I'm not going to sit there and hold my breath.
I think that's a good place to end on the Tigers for today. When well said, going into their off season. In college, I guess I'll start at the top where things started entertaining. Yeah, I mean, we said it was, don't pick the apples last week. This was every bit as good as advertised. I think you got some good games again next week, so it's
We
just
do.
great time for college football. I don't want to have the same rant I had last week, but it just proves to me week after week that I don't love the transfer portal. I don't love kids just leaving, like just because they don't, not really giving a chance at spots. But what I do kind of like what college football has become, and that's an even game where, yeah, I still understand the one loss and you're done thing, but to get all these big moments is now down the stretch. We're going to have so many teams playing these elimination games that I just think it's going to continue into the coming weeks of November, this kind of buzz. I
Yeah.
know you don't agree with me on a lot of that, but
No, I just
I
don't
think it's the
agree that
continuation.
I think you talk about elimination games. You had elimination games before. Nothing's changed. So that's
Yeah.
where
But I think, yeah. I almost think the conference realignment is more what I like than the actual playoff, in that you can, we have more of these. I mean, we'll talk about Oregon, Ohio State, more of these, Matt, USC and Penn State, like more of those matchups like every week as a, that you had than you had before. And that's more the conference realignment than the actual playoff, but.
All I'll say is don't oversaturate yourself, which you will, and you're going to get NFL Junior, where all these you're going to see
Yeah.
these so often, you're going to forget that it is special because you do see it every week. And again, I'm not saying you directly, just to the kind of the people who do support it. I think college was special before because the matchups you could kind of build to them and you had kind of levels to it. It's great that you say the Penn State USC game, we watched that, was sensational. Oregon, Ohio State, sensational. But you sit there and you keep saying, "Oh my God, this was sensational. This is sensational." You're gonna, everything in moderation is kind of
Yeah,
the classic
but
saying.
isn't that NFL is king model? Like, they've adopted that and they're the king, so why shouldn't you? I just think, like, yeah, I understand it loses a bit of the novelty and the build up to some of these games, but you also had a lot of these good, like, top teams playing six games that you didn't even need to watch, and that's not necessarily the case anymore.
Fair.
And then we'll it starts with Alabama. They get the, they're kind of get they another scare. They almost lose 27-25. Milroe with the two picks kind of turns it on late. Are they done? Are they? I mean, the schedule doesn't get any easier. They play Tennessee this upcoming week at Tennessee, who has kind of had their question marks the last couple weeks. Then they actually play three ranked teams in a row. Looking at the schedule, they'll play Missouri and then LSU at LSU, and then it kind of opens up to end the year. But they're not out of the woods here yet, and with all these scares, it makes me question if they truly are the best team in the country, like some people say.
Who are we talking about, Alabama right now?
Yeah.
Who said they're the best team in the country?
I said, like some people say.
Oh, who's saying that? I feel like everyone's
The
been.
SEC, so I don't know. Some people like to say the SEC is the king.
Yeah, but that's Texas.
True. That is
Even though
Texas.
Texas is not an SEC school, but welcome to the modern world, you
They
know?
are. They are now.
Actually, talking about Alabama and Tennessee, you mentioned I was sitting there and writing down my notes. Both of these schools going through rough patches. Nico kind of regressed from that September
Yeah.
Heisman hype, has kind of started to look the part of the young kid that he is. Alabama, I don't even understand what's going on with this team. I truly don't. Like, you talk about, oh, like, yeah, they won the game on the scoreboard, but they probably did more detriment to their fan base's thoughts toward their team and maybe even the players themselves in terms of psyche. Like, you won the game, but talking about South Carolina, like, come on. So we'll see what happens. They're kind of on their little crash course for Neyland Stadium on Saturday night. Should be an entertaining game, and I guess I look forward to watching it. I don't really have much more to say. It's just, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how you go from what's probably the best 30 minutes of football anybody has played against Georgia to forgetting how to play the sport for the next 240 minutes. I just don't
And
understand how to quantify it.
yeah, no, and like I just mentioned earlier, like the way the schedule shapes up these next 3 weeks, you better figure it out or you're going to be finding yourself not in the playoffs very, very quickly here.
Well, it's okay. You can go 8-4. You guys want everything in the playoffs, so.
Eight and four. I think it's shaping up where maybe a Georgia or an Alabama could get away with three losses, but that I don't think anyone else in the country could do worse than 10-2 and make the
Congrats.
playoffs.
In a sport where you're better than 70% of your competition, you're allowed to lose 30% of your games and still get in. Congratulations on the sport you won.
Oh, I don't like that argument because there's teams below 500 that make the playoffs in every other sport in America.
Every other, I told
Michigan
you.
State made the NCAA tournament at 12 and 11 3 years ago.
Okay, and every other. He also they shouldn't have that's talking about subjective criteria, not objective paths to a playoff spot. Second of all, when you bring up all the other sports, you're talking about professional sports, which are designed for parity. College football is not. So if we are designing a sport for the top of the sport to be as good as it is, why are we going to reward people who are not as good as it is?
But I just think, like, isn't it more fun when the same three teams aren't the top every year? That's just my argument in this. Like, I just think you're gonna have. I don't mind the parity. I like seeing the new schools there, and yeah, like you're gonna get some wacky, like results in that you get a 10-2 Big 12 school that's in the national championship somehow. But oh well, that's sports to me.
When I listen, if and when I see a 10-2 Big 12 school in a national championship, I
Yeah, that
will
was
be.
just
No,
yeah, that
no,
was.
this actually is to your point of anyone has a chance. If and when, because my argument's always been if you're the 10th seed in December, you're not going to beat any of the top schools in January. That's always been my point is you get to play all these
Sure.
schools in the regular season anyway. So if you're not good enough to beat them in the regular season, you don't fucking deserve a shot to play them in the postseason. If and when I see some Mickey Mouse school, let's say, like you say, let's say a two-loss Kansas State. If and when I see that team go out and beat Texas on a neutral field, I will absolutely say I was wrong about this. I'll hold out my hands like I'm going to getting arrested by the FBI. I'll just say I was objectively incorrect about this playoff. This is awesome. You guys are correct, but I just don't see that happening.
So it's more the point is just like they're wasted games.
Yes.
But I think you, besides Texas, this isn't a year where usually you have two, maybe three teams that are much better. Besides Texas, and I think Texas is yet to play the true bulk of the schedule. They played Michigan, and I mean, can we even call Oklahoma a team after that
No,
drumming?
no.
Like, Are they even that like much better than everybody else? You can't say Georgia is. Georgia lost to Alabama. They almost lost to Kentucky. They didn't look amazing against Mississippi State this week. You can't say it's Alabama. They've sucked the last 2 weeks. It's sure as hell not Penn State. Like, who is it? Georgia, Ohio State and Oregon, sure, but one loss to the other.
I mean, those are my three right there: Texas, Oregon, Ohio State. I think those are your three best teams in America, and we'll see what happens.
But I'm not even so sure. I think all three are going to lose a game in the next month.
Sure, but that's always been college. You don't really see those 15-0, 16-0 titles. That
Yeah, I guess. Speaking of Texas, they drum Oklahoma, not even really worth mentioning. Really, I guess we mentioned Tennessee. What am I missing? Oh, Penn State comes back down 14 at the half. James Franklin. That's a true like coach's one for me. That was like my outtake on that. It's just like who is going to be more of a fraud game, Lincoln Riley or James Franklin? And Lincoln Riley refuses to play defense in the second half, and that's what happened. So.
I mean, I'll give Penn State some credit. Obviously, USC is not a great football team, but at the same time, we've talked about this, everyone's talked about this. When teams
Yeah.
have to go coast to coast, it is not easy. Ask Ohio State about it, ask any Big Ten school that has gone west, ask the West Coast teams that come east. It does, like,
Michigan.
you don't travel. It doesn't work. And Penn State went in, won a game. So congratulations to them. Like you say, you keep your undefeated record and you kind of march on to your Super Bowl when Ohio State comes to town in a couple weeks. But that's really it. That it's kind of funny for me. One of the talking points I had from this is, did you see the fan who paid to run out of the tunnel?
Yeah.
I think that's
Like
hilarious.
what? It's like what? Like how? Like, I guess I should never criticize someone for being too into football, but like, how like into it do you have to be for that to be what you want to spend your money on?
So, for those who are not aware, there was a Penn State fan who paid $1,800 to run out of the USC tunnel with his Penn State gear on because apparently there's just no rules and nobody kind of checked him and said, "Hey, man, like, we appreciate the donation. Like, some kid's going to get a great steak out of this on the football team, but we can't let you
Yeah.
run out there at the Coliseum wearing your Penn State gear."
Drew Aller's gonna have a nice night at the strip club.
Yeah. So that was funny to me. I mean, I guess.
And dude, I say this like that's one you gotta get a survive and advance one, because like you said, and this is where I guess I will criticize it. I mean, they're gonna have Ohio State at home in 2 weeks, but the rest of their schedule, they might not be. Washington might be the only game they're favored by less than 10 points. So that game's not even going to matter for them, Ohio State. It's just going to be seeding.
Are you talking Ohio State or Penn State right now?
Penn State. I'm saying the Ohio State game is not going to matter for them because it's going to be seeding.
I think
They
it does
they're
matter because if they lose to Ohio State, they're not in the Big Ten title and they cannot get a bye week.
Okay, yeah. So that's seeding more or less. I'm saying they should be a playoff team. They'll be a playoff team regardless. I guess you're right. You do want the bye. Never mind.
I know what you're
But
saying,
it's.
and if you want to give me more ammunition of congratulations, you play 10
I
Mickey
know.
Mouse
That's
schools
why.
and you had a high ranking to begin the season, so you're automatically in. I'll take the flowers.
Yeah, no, I started with this, unfortunately, feeds into your point, but you go with at Wisconsin, Ohio State at home. Home against Washington, home against Purdue, away against Minnesota, and home against Maryland.
That's an ugly schedule, but
Next, I believe we just got probably the two big ones.
yep.
Oregon and Ohio State and Ole Miss and LSU. I think Dan Lanning is just kind of meant to win these games. He's a guy that has kind of proven that he belongs as a top college coach in a college program. It seems like guys respond to him. He's able to get big time recruit. Why are you making a face like that?
You talking about Dan Lanning?
Yeah.
This is the first big game he's ever won in his career.
He's only been there for like 3 years.
Okay, so why didn't he win a big game? Why did he beat Utah in a Pac-12 championship? Why did he have to go 0-2 against Washington last year? I'm not saying he doesn't belong and that genius move was genius. We're going to talk about it. I'm just saying, let's not sit here and pretend like this is Nick Saban in the mid-2010s. This,
No, I'm
he
not.
needed
I'm
this
saying
win.
like he's the, but like you're a guy that really hasn't gotten an opportunity in a big time program, and now in year three with his guys and his program established to go out and get a win like that. And I think the way he responds, I know they lost the big one against Washington last year,
Two
but I, two of them, you're right, they
of
lost the Pac-12 championship, my bad. I think the way players respond to him and the way he's been able to address the transfer portal is that he's somewhere here, someone here to stay, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying let's not sit here and call this guy Nick Saban in the mid-2010s where he's just drubbing everyone because this is that's the biggest win of Dan Lanning's career, and we're talking about a regular season home game against OSU.
Yeah.
So let's breathe.
That he
And
very well could have lost.
yeah, that he very well could have lost. And the other thing is, if you want to talk about kind of some of the tools at his disposal, he has unlimited money from Phil Knight to build a
Yeah.
program. So let's not pretend like this guy's begging on the streets for some 3 stars out of Ohio like
No,
Johnson Smith
but I
was.
said you still got to go out and get the guy.
You
Like,
do.
yeah, you have unlimited money. So do 20 other schools.
I
So.
agree. Actually, maybe not 20, but I agree. Let's actually talk about the game because this was game of the year so far.
Yeah.
I think this was better than Bama Georgia in the sense that this was always close. The Bama Georgia game, you watched them curb stomp the first 30
Fair.
minutes. You're like, all right, cool. You turn it off for the third and basically half the fourth quarter. You turn it back on. You're like, what the fuck? Why is this a football game again? So this was consistently close, back and forth. I didn't really understand. I'll quickly talk about this. Why Ohio State is didn't go for two with one of their touchdowns when they were only kind of going up by six after extra points. I thought that was like, I'm not saying
Yeah.
I don't think it's a hill you die. I just think you have the chance to kind of get back up to kind of your quote unquote full seven, take it. Worst case, you miss it, they score a touchdown, they'll go for two, and then now you're down three and you kind of know what you need to do. I would have liked to see that, but again, that's not necessarily something that you kind of freak out over. I think some of the things that you want to talk about, Dan Lanning, he had them ready to play. He had the perfect counters at the perfect moments. That onside kick, incredible. Obviously, we have to talk about it. The play where 10 seconds left, he calls a timeout. Coming out of the timeout, Oregon's got 12 guys on the field. And it's not one of those, oh, like the fat defensive tackle got caught by Aaron Rodgers because he saw it and he ran up to the line. They just brought out 12 defenders and said, we're going to play defense with 12. We're going to use that extra defender so that we can stop you. And then we're going to take our 5 yard penalty at the expense of a 5 yard play. And you're going to lose 50% of your ability to run another play. And it's only going to cost us 5 yards. That was a genius move by him. It was actually so genius that 3 days later, the NCAA comes out and changes the rule, which I actually agree with that as well. While I'm
I
going to give.
agree.
It's perfect. Kudos to Dan Lanning, but it's kind of like the Kenny Pickett fake slide, where it's like, congrats on taking advantage of a loophole that existed, but this is a loophole that should not exist. So that loophole's been closed. For those wondering, now if you play defense intentionally with 12 people, you have to factor in the intentionally. The offense will get the 5 yard penalty, and they will also get to reset the clock to what it was before that play had been snapped. If you get caught with 12 men, like I said, if someone's running off the field and he's not going to go turn around and cover one of the receivers, that is still too many men, but you're not going to have that clock comes back on type caveat. So kudos to Dan Lanning for that. The offense was great. They had some explosive plays on this Ohio State defense that was supposedly better and supposedly it fixed all their problems. And that's kind of going to get me into the next point is, for this $20 million roster, for this Jim Knowles, Mr. Doctor Defense, and the guy who's going to fix everything, he has routinely had his team torched in big games since he was hired, I think in 2022. So some fun stats here. In the last five games against top five teams, so the three games against Michigan, the game against Georgia, and the game against Oregon just now, Ohio State has not forced a fourth quarter punt.
Wow.
So that's not good. Also, I remember I was listening to some radio talk and some comments, and it was basically Ohio State fans kind of yelling about the situation. They basically said they don't recall a moment in a big game where they've gotten a quarterback sack since Chase Young against Clemson in 2019, which that's ugly as well. And if you think about it, that's kind of true for a school that routinely gets these five-star just behemoths at defensive end. These JT Tuiamamolos, this Jack Sawyers of the world, the whatever the Harrison kid's name is, they don't make any stops. So you have to look at this Ohio State defense, and kind of say, what are we doing? Now, it's obviously like you don't ring any alarm bells. Like, look, Ohio State was in that game, and if Will Howard doesn't lobotomize himself, and we're gonna get to him because that's one of the most inexcusable things I've ever seen, especially from a veteran quarterback. All not forget about a young one. Ohio State, are you sad you lost? Sure. Are you upset you lost? Sure. But all your goals are in front of you. I'm pretty sure they go out, they finish the season 11-1. I'd assume they end up in Indianapolis playing Oregon on a neutral field. And guess what? When you play Oregon on a neutral field in Indianapolis, guess what? Oregon's the ones doing the traveling. They got to come from the West Coast that we talk about. They lose the fact that Autzen Stadium is an absolute just fortress. You don't really go there and win if you're an away team. So I think if and when Ohio State and Oregon meet each other in the Big 12 title again, I'd assume Ohio State is once again favored, even though they lost the first game. So you just have to sit there and again try and figure out what's going on with this defense. You cannot be as hyped up as they are year over year with these super duper 17-star players and never get any big time stops and big time moments.
It's a weird part, like part of time for this program, and that you do mention it, is they just haven't had that moment. Feels like it's a program that's always came out when it means the most, the Urban Meyer, the Jim Tressel era, and in this Ryan Day era, they just simply haven't had it in these games and in these moments, and it's now a year-long thing. But like you said, it's not something you can go and overreact and say Ryan Day should be fired. That'll happen when he loses the day after, or 2 days after Thanksgiving, at the Big House.
It's in the shoe this
But
week.
sorry, you're right, it is at the Shoe. But you know what I mean, and like you said, all their things are in front of them. I'd imagine they're probably a touchdown favorite even against Penn State, who's third right now. With all that talent, you just question how far are they going to take this team if this is the mo how they're going to come out when the times matter the most.
So let's before I answer that, let's get to Will Howard. You have 6 seconds left with a timeout in your back pocket. In a moment like that, you have two options. Your options are quick throw, whether it be on an out route or some kind of slant through the middle of the field, because you do have a timeout, or it is a designed quarterback or halfback run. Because you assume that the other team's defense will be playing the end lines and playing the sidelines, assuming that you're going to go wide to try and stop the clock. And you run up the middle, you gain 10 to 12 yards, you go down, you take your timeout. What you cannot do under any fathom of just, well, this, I don't understand how this even crosses your mind, is take the snap, look around for 4 seconds, step up. Look around for another second as if you're still going to try and find a pass and then take off. You, what the fuck was that? It's what, like, I sit here and I'm going to continue to kind of use that, this man as a barometer, but that is something that a 17-year-old Aiden Childs does. That is not what a Big 12, I'm pretty sure champion last year, Will Howard, who earned the big money move to Ohio State, who's been a starter at programs before and who's played in games before and has the experience. That's not something like, how does that cross your mind? I cannot comprehend it. I'm not even going to ask you. Like, this is me speaking out loud because there is no thought, like, whether it be rational or irrational, there is not a single way on planet Earth or any planet that exists for that matter, how you can try and justify what Will Howard did.
Yeah, I don't even like have, there's no rebuttal to that. Like, there's nothing to add, there's nothing to argue. It's
Yeah.
just anything else on this one?
No, I mean, like I said, I expect to see Oregon and Ohio State playing each other again for the Big Ten title in Indianapolis, if that's even where they keep it. I don't know if it's going to start moving now that they brought the West Coast schools in, but
The only other game worth mentioning, LSU Ole Miss. Just another one for Ole Miss. It's just like they can't, like, this is just like kind of a tale as old as time. Like, I
yeah.
know Baton Rouge is just one of the harder places to go in at night, like that, even though I'm not convinced this team is anything, although they have recovered nicely since week one. I'm not sure they've played anybody besides, I believe they played in. No, that they haven't played. You're right. I'm right. They haven't played a soul since then. But this is just what Ole Miss is. This is why I think, and it's going to be a really cheeky and very him move. But Lane Kiffin's going to be coaching Florida this time next year. It's just not what this program was meant to do. They're a fine SEC program, but they're just meant to lose these types of games. And even Lane Kiffin, who I think is a very questionable person, but a very good football coach, even he can't bring them to kind of that next level. Once you are that next level, you win these types of games, and they're just never going to be that. I'm sorry, Ole Miss people. Probably don't have one that listen. I know one person that goes there, and he definitely doesn't listen to this podcast. So, yeah, I don't have much to add other than that because that's my takeaway. Ole Miss was just never meant to win this game. They're never meant to be this type of team. And Brian Kelly gets to keep his job for one more week.
So my phone, when anytime I kept trying to type in Lane Kiffin, kept autocorrecting his last name to Lane Muffin, and that might be a very good example of what he is as a head coach. He is an absolute muffin, an absolute choke artist, an absolute just bottle job.
Just like not like a winner as a head
No.
coach. You know what I
Well,
mean?
here's what's funny, and I was going to get to this because I heard someone talking about this, and I looked into it, and holy shit, he's 49 years old. He has been the head coach of the Oakland Raiders
Didn't know that.
in 2007
Oh,
and
wow.
2008, the Tennessee Volunteers in 09,
Yep.
the USC Trojans in 2010 to
Yep.
2013.
Obviously,
Then he
Tennis.
went, then that's when Nick Saban kind of brought him under his wing and he went to Alabama. Then he went
That's
to
when he got in
FAU.
trouble.
Yeah. Then he went to Alabama, to FAU after that. And then now he's been at Ole Miss since 2020. So this guy's ability to he's still not 50. Like he's young by a coach's
Yeah.
standard still. And he's had all of those jobs listed, as you just said. He is going to fail upwards again and end
Yeah.
up in Gainesville at the Swamp in 11 months. It's incredible, this guy's power and ability to fail upwards in life.
He'll do the same thing at Florida. Like they'll just like be, well, they'll be what Florida has been since Urban Meyer, to be honest, and just like not be essentially Ole Miss, what Ole Miss has been the last 3 years.
Yeah, that maybe the Jim McElwain Gators of the mid 2010s, where it's like they could get to 10 wins, but they'd lose every bowl game and lose every big game.
Right, but hasn't that that's what he's done at Ole
That's
Miss
what
the
I'm saying.
last
No,
three
I'm saying
years.
that, like you say, that's what he's gonna bring Florida back to. The
Yeah, right.
9-10 win seasons, lose to everybody, always lose the cocktail party in Jacksonville against Georgia, always lose to Bama when you get to draw them in the schedule, and occasionally, if you get lucky with scheduling purposes, you get to jump into the playoff at 10-2. That's going to be Lane Kiffin. But
Yeah,
yeah,
just a bigger check.
entertaining enough. Yeah, more power to him. Where do you think he goes after Florida? If we're talking about failing upwards, what's his next job after Florida in 2028? Are we
It's
thinking
got
maybe
to stay in the SEC,
what
right?
about the NFL? I feel like he could get an NFL
Ah,
job after back to the pros.
you know who needs the coach? The Jets.
We're talking 2028. We got to project real because we're talking after Florida because he fails
Yeah.
upwards. So after Florida, where's he going?
Jets. I'm
All
saying the
right.
Jets.
The Jets. Yeah, the Jets will probably be three coaches farther at that point. Rodgers will be 47 and still trying to play.
40s.
Oh dear.
Gosh.
I have nothing else for college. Anything
Yeah.
else for you before we get to the NFL? All
No, let's go to the NFL.
right. Let's just start with the Lions. It's
The
very,
story of the week.
yeah, I mean, it's very like high and low. How like you play the absolute perfect game given the team you're playing, where you're playing them, the significance of the day to that team's owner, how
Yeah.
you beat them, how you played them, just how you dominated them. And all of it, pretty much at the end of it, felt like a loss because Aiden Hutchinson wraps his leg around Aleem McNeil and just has an ugly, ugly leg break done for the season. Let's start with the game first, then let's get into the Hutchinson thing specifically. Once again, run game firing on all cylinders. And we talk about Ben Johnson and his bag. I think he pretty much emptied the bag. If that's not an empty
Yeah.
bag with what that team did and what we
Yeah.
did to them is ridiculous. Running double reverse end around bombs to Sam Laporta over the top, bombs to Jamal over the top, bombs to Tim Patrick over the top, throwing passes to Taylor Decker in the end zone, lining up Dan Skipper as a wide receiver, not just, oh, ha, 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 he's going to be a tight end who reported eligible. They straight up lined Dan Skipper up as the X receiver at the bottom of the screen. Then you have a designed lateral to your right tackle. What was that game? Like, what was that?
I mean, that was just Ben Johnson saying, listen, this is so easy. I'm just gonna get funky with you guys. So here's the shit I draw up when I do drugs.
Like that was, I don't even like, what do you think that's a message from last year where they thought the league screwed them in the game for the Dan Skipper reported not on?
Yeah.
Is that what, why do you consider, like, how do you do that? It
Well,
was
I mean, the
insane.
way they were winning that game, it gets easier and easier, but still, I agree is that like this you can't do that like all of that in one game in a playoff game, right? Like you just can't. But it worked. And I guess the only thing I have to say, and I only got to watch the end when it was already kind of out of hand, was I don't think the TV normally I find like the wake up and all that ESPN crap the next day to be very dramatic in their statements, but Rex Ryan said the Lions won a big game but lost the Super Bowl yesterday, and I don't think that's that dramatic of a statement on how big of a loss to Hutchinson is.
So I agree on the how monumental it is, but I don't agree with the kind of the blanket coverage of you. I think this team still can win a Super Bowl. You look at this offense
In the
and
NFC.
yeah, I mean, this is the best offense in football, and I will be fair, the last two games against Seattle and Dallas, which have been the true explosions of like 40 and 40 or whatever we put up in terms of exact numbers.
Yeah.
You have to factor in that those teams have missed like a combined 9 or 10 starters just on the defensive lines.
Yep.
So I can't sit here and completely pump the air in the tires. I have to be realistic. So like I don't expect this to always be the case, but this is still the best offense in football. And I think that when you have the best offense in football, you are always going to give yourself a chance to win games, especially as the season goes on. And we've talked about it. The way this offense is built, it's not just, oh, the Peyton Manning Broncos of 2013, where you're going to throw for 6,000 yards and 56 touchdowns. It's like, no, they do this in a way that travels. They do this in a way that you can win outdoors, indoors, typhoons, tornadoes. Pick some kind of hazard, and the way the Detroit Lions are built, you can win with it in the sense that David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs and that offensive line are just going to bully you. And it is going to be tough for you to stop them. Now, I'll say one thing about Montgomery before we get to the defensive side is thank fucking God Jamal Williams got greedy with that contract offer in 2022 and decided to decline what we offered him, because had he accepted that, David Montgomery's not here. And I said it at the time, and I've been wowed by just how good he is. David Montgomery, in every single sense of football, the athleticism, ability is so far clear of Jamal Williams. The only thing Jamal Williams was good for was a bowling ball from the 2-yard line. And good, look, you had a niche. You made kind of, I don't want to say a career, but you got yourself a nice contract from the Saints out of it. Kudos to you. But Jamal Williams was not a good running back, like, in all fairness. And you watch David Montgomery run. It's not just the fact that he's powerful. He is. He runs over tacklers. You always see these crazy broken tackles. He's elusive. He's quick. You watch him accelerate. He's pulling away from defenders that are supposedly faster than him. He's got hands. He's not Jahmyr Gibbs. He's not Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield, but he's not running around with cinder blocks for hands. He is sensational. This offense is incredible. And I still do think that they have the ability to win a Super Bowl without Hutchinson. But kind of like the Detroit Tigers, you are now on much thinner ice than
Yep.
you were 3 days ago or 4 days ago, whenever before the injury happened. Because now you're all pro potential defensive player of the year. That's how good Hutchinson was playing, is now dead. And if you really want to count Marcus Davenport as a starter, he's dead and has been dead. So you're down both of your starting defensive tackles from week one, or defensive ends. You have not, you don't, it doesn't seem like they're in a rush to do anything about filling it. And I don't necessarily think they need to right now, but
Yeah.
I feel like you do need to make a move if you want to try and, once again, give yourself a little bit more leeway. It's just, what is that move going to be? How aggressive does Brad Holmes want to be? He's kind of shown in the past that he doesn't want to be aggressive. Maybe he thinks this team is at a different stage than the previous ones where he wasn't, and he says, you know what? I can afford to be aggressive here, and we'll see what happens. But I do think they need to get help.
Yeah, I agree. And you make a good point with this team being in a different spot than maybe what Brad Holmes thought teams were even last year or the year before, in that I really do. You're in this window where you're the best team in the NFC right now. And in the NFL, that could be just this year. It could be just this year and next year. And that's very reasonable. That's how quickly windows close. And I don't think that's that unreasonable to say that it's now or never. I'd like to see. I don't like, yeah, you don't have to go out and get Max Crosby for this team to like for that to be the difference between winning and losing a Super Bowl, but you got to go out there and replace your best player in some capacity.
You start with Crosby. I guess maybe we can quickly run through some of the potential names that have kind of been talked about by fans, that have been talked about by most people around the league.
Yeah.
Obviously, Max Crosby's the very first name brought up. It's the local guy. It's quite literally a version of Aiden Hutchinson with tattoos.
Right.
He's incredible. Another guy like Hutchinson that plays with an insane motor and is good
Motor.
against both aspects of an offense. He can play the run and he can obviously rush the passer. So, yeah, he's probably your best case drop-in replacement, but for all of those reasons I just listed, he's probably not going to be available. I know the Las Vegas Raiders just traded away Devontae Adams, and they're probably showing signs that they might go into a rebuild, but Crosby just turned 27, so you can make the argument that you do a soft rebuild and he's still there with you. On the flip side, I don't see the Raiders being willing to trade him. Now, that doesn't mean you
I could
shouldn't
see it.
call. You absolutely call him and say, "Hey man, what's it going to take for Mr. Crosby?" And if Al David or if Al Davis, if Mark Davis calls you and picks up the phone and says, "Yeah, I want your next four first round picks and a 10% ownership stake of Ford Motor Company," you hang up. That's okay. There's nothing wrong. At least you tried.
Agree. I guess what would you be willing to pay for Max Crosby?
I mean, I
Two
feel like
firsts.
I would probably give up three firsts from Max Crosby. If this
I'd
team,
put my line at two firsts.
and look, I don't think that two firsts is potentially enough for a player that good. And to be
No, probably
fair,
not.
if you think about those firsts, this is a team that, barring
Yeah.
a total LA Rams 80% of your salary cap on IR catastrophe, is going to be picking in the late 20s, early 30s with those first round picks.
Yeah.
So, what exactly is the 30th best player in college in 2026 going to do for me if my window in 2026 is already closed? So, that's kind of my thought of, I'm willing to kind of go out
Yeah.
there, but I'm also a little bit more aggressive than maybe the average person when it comes to building a team. I'm a little impatient, and that doesn't
Well,
make
this
me.
whole franchise deserves to be impatient
I
right now,
agree.
I feel like.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that one side's right, the other's wrong. It's just that's how I view it. The other thing is, like, picks can't tackle Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. They can't because they're not there on your team yet. So at some point, you do need to put the chips inside. I think, and I said this as soon as it happened, just because I always felt Crosby would be unrealistic, is Trey Hendrickson. That to me is probably your best case, best player available for a reasonable price. And it's unfortunate that your Giants over here are buns and could
Yeah.
not beat the Bengals on Sunday night because
What a horrible game that was.
that was horrific. But had the Giants beaten the Bengals this last Sunday, the Bengals are staring the barrel of 1-5. You know, T. Higgins on a franchise tag. Maybe you trade him in season. You can call them about Trey Hendrickson and say, "Hello, I am Brad Holmes. Here is insert second round pick, future third round pick. Give me Trey Hendrickson." And they say, "Yeah, our season's fucked. Here, please take him." I think that would have been best case, but at 2-4, they're probably still going to sit there and say they have a shot. And so he's probably not available either right now, which is unfortunate because I think he is kind of perfect. He's obviously not as good as Max Crosby, and he's older than Max Crosby, but that's why he's cheaper than Max Crosby and realistically attainable.
I just loved that phone call you just did. Hi, I'm Brad Holmes. And the Bengals say, sure, our season's over. Oh, that was funny.
Don't know.
Yeah, anything else on the line? Like, it's such an asking. It's such a good feel. But clearly the Vegas feels something about Hutchinson. They're 3-point dogs to the Vikings. I know it's an away game, which basically means it's a toss up with 3 points. But
Yeah. Hey, look, man, I'll tell you,
so,
it's that offense.
yeah.
I don't have anything else about the Lions. Should we move around to
No.
some other things around the league?
Yeah, I call this weekend like the weekend of the blowout. There weren't a ton of amazing games. I'll let you kind of pick and choose what you want to talk about.
Sure. I'll start with the morning game.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I am actually going to be actually nice to this person for maybe the first time in my life. I texted you about this and some others. While my overarching opinion of Trevor Lawrence has not changed, I still think he's a below average, probably bottom 16 to 22 quarterback in football. I absolutely have some sympathy for him because you watched that game of Bears versus Jaguars, and there is not a single thing that that football team does well in any regard.
No.
Your coaching is bad. Your play calling is bad. Your offensive line is bad. Your receivers are bad. The running backs cannot hold on to a football. The defense cannot make a tackle. And on the off chance that they do make a tackle, it's done in some illegal way where the other team gets a first down at the end of it because you had defensive holding. Like, watching that game was some of the most insane kind of prophet quote, I say air quotes here, professional football I've ever seen. There was not a single thing that the Jaguars did correctly. Gabe Davis dropping lollipops in the end zone. Tank Bigsby can't hold on to a ball. Travis. ETN, I don't even, I'm just drawing a blank on his name because I'm so just like worked up right now. ETN cannot hold on to a football before he gets a magical hamstring injury that pulls him out of the game. Again, the offensive line doesn't block anybody. The coaching, you want to talk about some idiot coaching. You saw Doug Peterson get on a podium at the end of that and basically fire himself. He gets up at the end of that game and says, "A culture change is needed." Dude, you are the culture. You are openly telling the owner, "I am not enough. I am not right for this team." How can you possibly consider the phrase coaching or culture change is required when you're the head coach? You build the culture.
Yeah, I was gonna bring up the Doug Peterson thing is, man, he's gotta be next, right? And are we gonna look back and say Doug Peterson and Nick Foles, what a weird coaching quarterback conversation to what the that's gotta be the weirdest, like, did that happen? Doug Peterson and Nick Foles? Maybe Brady and Belichick? Like, boy, that's people are gonna look back and go, who the heck how'd they lose that one?
Completely agree with you. It's genuinely insane that Nick Foles, Mr. Career Backup, and Doug Peterson, who has just torpedoed his last two head coaching jobs and somehow allows a man named Press Taylor to just hold him hostage and continue to bring him around everywhere, even though Press Taylor cannot call a sixth grade offense, much less an NFL one. It's incredible. I'm absolutely correct. I absolutely agree with you. How does that team beat Brady and Belichick in a Super Bowl?
Yeah. Just thought that was funny to bring
Yeah. Other than that, kind of some of the things I had, the Ravens playing like the best team in football.
Yeah.
They're just an absolute juggernaut. I mean, we talked about the Derrick Henry kind of Baltimore Ravens fit in the offseason when he was signed. And it's one thing to think about how well it works. It's another thing to see it because you can't really stop them in the sense that they're the perfect thunder and lightning combo where if you decide to go
Yeah.
big and let's say bring extra linemen and extra linebackers to try and stop Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson's just going to keep the ball. He's going to take off himself and he's faster than those players you've just put on the field. And if you decide to try and go quick and bring on some smaller linebackers that kind of are hybrid safeties and maybe some more corners and try and get guys that can run with Lamar Jackson, he hands it off to a moving mountain. Like, and then Derrick Henry just runs through you because the guys that you have on the field are not big enough to stop him. And he's always going to fall forward for three extra yards. It is
Yeah.
just the perfect combination. I don't know what happened in the, I mean, actually, I know what happened in the first game where Isaiah Likely's toe causes an out of bounds on a touchdown catch, and they kind of lose that game. I don't know how they lost to the Raiders at home. That's just the magic of the NFL, I guess. But this team is on fire, four straight victories, playing like the best team in football. And I'm sure because I say all this, they're just going to end up losing to Mahomes in the playoffs again.
Yeah. That's the way it is right now, man. That's the way it's his league, and we're all just living in it.
Yeah, the I have two other things. The very quickly, the NFC North best division in football,
Yeah.
top four teams in point differential in the league are all the NFC North teams. It's also the first time since the 2002 division realignment that all four division teams have 4+ wins 6 weeks into a season. I mean, it's just
Ever or in the NFC North?
ever. Or at least
Wow.
since the division realignment, at least since
Okay.
02, because that's when they brought in the Texans and I think someone else. So since at least 2002, it's the first time any division has done it, and I'm sure it probably hasn't been done going farther back. Because again, all four of your teams having 4+ wins after 6 weeks, that's tough. So
Yeah.
I mean, more power to him. Caleb Williams has really come on the last three games, and he's kind of looking like that quarterback and kind of
Yeah.
showcasing why these irrational debates are stupid of the, oh my God, did the Bears make a mistake with Jaden Daniels? It's like, dude, you give these kids a little bit of time to figure it out. Obviously, the Packers, Jordan Love is back and healthy now for a couple
Yep.
weeks. They were able to hold the tread water with him kind of gone. They're getting their receivers back healthy. The defense is slowly getting back to full health, and they're winning games. Obviously, we know about the Vikings. I think one of the two undefeated teams left in the league. Hopefully, they won't be when we talk next week. And yeah, it's a juggernaut of a division.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's crazy that I think the Vikings have played the Packers, and that's it so far as division matchups.
Correct.
So they're going to eat each other up a little bit. It's not going to stay that way. As far as like all these teams being 4-2 or better, but or that win percentage that is. But yeah, best division in football. All four teams have a shot at the playoffs this year, to be honest. Would it be? No, that's, I'm not gonna say that. That's, I'm not gonna go that
Yeah,
far.
say it.
No,
Okay.
I'm not.
All
I
right.
don't think it's, I don't actually, I don't even think it's possible.
What?
Because there's,
It's most definitely possible. It just hasn't happened before. And that can because
yeah, it is possible. I think all four teams might make the playoffs this year.
they're going to have to be absolutely just clinical with their non-division games because we're probably all just going to eat each other up and it's going to be like, two teams are 3-3, one team's 4-2, and one team's 2-4 in the division game. So you're gonna have to build in those losses. So you're
Yeah.
gonna have to take care of business everywhere else. But I do agree, based on how well these teams are playing, with a weak NFC, if people keep getting hurt and people keep losing games, because I mean, you look around, Falcons, Bucks, okay. I don't love it. Eagles and what's their face? The Commanders, okay. Like, I think you can kind of beat around that. You can beat those teams.
Yeah.
And then the NFC West, it's all really kind of hurt, and I don't really believe in any of them. So outside
Agreed.
of San Francisco, of course. But I'd assume they win the division once McCaffrey comes back. So
Which seems like it's getting closer if they put like a timetable on it.
I heard like early to mid-November for him. So I'm sure
I
that'll be a
heard
welcome
similar.
addition for the 3-3 49ers, potentially soon to be 3-4 with their date against Kansas City this upcoming weekend.
What did they pimp that game to?
It's a 420 game.
Okay. I'm
That,
surprised it's not even prime time.
unfortunately, it's too early in the season for them to flex those games. I'm pretty sure they only flex them later on, like after.
I heard an Aikman interview that they were gonna start flexing the Monday nights very soon.
I mean, more power to them. Speaking of Monday nights, you know what happens on Monday, October 21st?
Two
It's
games.
the first ever exclusively on ESPN Plus NFL football game.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at this right now. One's ABC ESPN, the other is ESPN Plus. Good thing I have zero interest in the Chargers and the Cardinals, and I have quite
Don't
a
think
bit.
anyone outside of the family of the players have interest in watching that game either.
Especially when you have to pay for ESPN Plus for it, and especially when Ravens and Bucks is also on. But yeah, that's crazy. And I maybe it's. This is so biased because I didn't think like when the game was on, the playoff game was on Peacock. I was like, oh, that's inconvenient, but I have Peacock, so it's not that big of a problem. Now in my head, I'm just thinking, how the hell could they put a game on ESPN Plus? Because I don't have ESPN
No,
Plus.
it's absolute cabin pressure has been lost. I'm shocked there's not a Paramount only game yet, but I'm sure there will be sooner rather than later. Obviously, there's going to be this exclusive Black Friday games. Doesn't Netflix have games?
Yeah, Netflix has playoff games this
Oh
year.
my God, dude, we've lost cabin pressure with the whole catering to TV networks. And I understand they pay the bills, so like they have the rights to say, "Well, you fuck you guys, I want to go now and I want this." But
It's not
geez.
even the networks who have the big pockets now, though. It's the streaming cert,
Yeah, but the networks own the streaming services. Like Paramount is owned by CBS and
who owns
ESPN is owned.
Netflix?
I mean, Netflix is themselves, but like that's the only
Right.
one. Like obviously Amazon's Amazon, but
Right.
you look at ESPN Plus, that's owned by
But Amazon's not
ESPN.
a cable company or a net TV network.
They might as well be at this point.
I guess.
With the amount of money they put into Prime Video, they might as well be a TV network.
But like a network, I don't know. I separate the TV networks like the Turner, ESPNs, CBS, Fox from these streaming services. But I see what you mean in that, like you said, who owns CBS or what CBS.
CBS owns Paramount. Paramount, again, I don't think Paramount's had exclusive games yet.
NBC owns Peacock.
And yeah, NBC has Peacock. Obviously, ESPN and Disney have ESPN Plus, not
Right.
shockingly enough there.
Right.
I actually don't know what Fox streaming is, if they even have
Yeah.
one.
I don't think they have one, to be
More
honest.
power to them. They're suddenly my favorite news network again, just because I don't have to deal with I don't get, oh shoot. I did not mean it like that. Oh dear Lord.
We
That is.
started. What do we start with before we hopped on? How two was 2 weeks from the election, so
Oh
good
God, that is
times.
not what I meant. I meant as kind of a TV network for the NFL, because they don't try and pimp anything behind a paywall. They just have everything on their free to air TV, but that came out tough.
Oh, that's good. Anything else? Week 6 in the NFL.
The only thing is not necessarily week six, but it's the trades that happened yesterday or
Yeah,
this morning.
definitely.
I forget the days they all blend together, but Devontae Adams is officially a New York Jet. Aaron Rodgers has officially completed his takeover of that football team at every single
Yeah.
level. And this is his last hurrah as an NFL quarterback. And he said to himself, "I'm gonna go out with my guys. I'm gonna go out on my terms." And he's probably gonna go out because I don't see this Jets team kind of figuring it out, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of the I don't know. It's like one of those things where like Monday night, the defense was more the problem than the offense. And then you went and get the Devontae Adams, and now we're saying this team's like back at a Super Bowl team after they just fired their coach and added a receiver of all positions. Like, I don't know. It just seems very jumping the gun. It seems like just more of a just like a wow piece than actually affecting their chances in the long run, in my opinion. I know we could go on and on about Aaron Rodgers and his takeover of this organization, as I'll call it, but I'll just leave it at like it's his organization now. He's gotten the coach fired. He all his guys are there. Alan Lazard, Devontae Adams, just call him the Green Bay Packers.
Nathaniel Hackett's there too.
Nathaniel Hackett's there for some reason. He was like his quarterback's coach for only like 2 years, and he has this weird affinity for him for not really being successful anywhere.
I have no idea. But and then the other kind of trade that happened to Amari Cooper now plays for the Buffalo Bills.
Makes a lot of sense.
I love that trade for Buffalo. They needed a true wide receiver one because Keon Coleman is a rookie and he's kind of not ready. He's had some drops. It seems like he's had some
Shakir is
team
not that
attitude
guy either.
issues. Yeah, Shakir's a Mickey Mouse slot guy. I mean, Dalton Kincaid's cool, but that's a tight end, and his name's not Travis Kelce, so that's not really a focal point to an offense. I mean, Curtis Samuel, oh, that was a really cool name back in 2017. And this team needed that kind of alpha wide receiver one. They got it. So good for them. They will, just like the Baltimore Ravens, they are now locked and loaded and primed for a loss to Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think them more so. Like, I think you've seen the last couple of weeks that they're a good team. They're like a for sure playoff team, especially in that division. That division is awful, especially with Tua down, and since Rodgers is running a team. But they have clear flaws, I think. Unlike the Ravens, who it's just like, yeah, like they're the best team, but like they don't have Patrick Mahomes. Like, I do see that this is not quite the Bills team maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Like, I know they've kind of had their moments where they've said that elsewhere, but the last couple of weeks they've kind of shown their colors. I know they got a nice win against the Jets on Monday.
I agree. Now that is all I have. Now I'm all tapped out of NFL storylines.
All right, I that's all I got either. And a depressing one. Well, we didn't get to talk about State, which is usually a loss, so I guess not that depressing, but we did have to talk about the Tigers and Aiden Hutchinson. Sad stories. So with that, guys, thanks for tuning in. It's been another great episode of El Football. I know I can't say that because that implies it's soccer. El Football Americano. There we go.
Love it.
Vladdy, I'll let you have the last words.
You know what? After a bye week, I've decided to reclaim my love for this football team. Let's end it with a go green.